Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I'm your host. Yes, it is I, Shane Bacon. A fun one today. Golf Channel's Matt Janella on the podcast talking golf travel, band and dunes. He gave us his Mount Rushmore of current golf designers and much, much more. It was a lengthy and fun conversation with one of the better dudes in the golf industry. Matt Janella knows everything in and out about golf travel. I'm planning on going to Bandon Dunes next week. Yes, I will be at Bandon Dunes. It's my bachelor party. And why not have a bachelor party at the best golf resort in the country? If I do say that, I think Matt Janella will agree with me. You'll hear a lot about that during our conversation. We touched a lot on Bandon and then really got into a lot of fun stuff about golf travel and trips and the right way to do it, the right way to take a good picture. He, of course, has incredible Instagram account. But first, this week's podcast is brought to you by Swing Juice. I talked a lot about the Swing Juice t-shirts, but as the weather's turning in a lot of the country, it's time to remind you that Swing Juice has hoodies. Yes, some of your favorite t-shirt styles are emblazoned on hoodies, including golf and tacos, golf and hip-hop, much, much more. Use that promo code BACON at checkout to save yourself 20%. It's cold. That doesn't mean you should stop rocking your golf gear. Pick up a hoodie at swingjuice.com right now. Use that offer code BACON. You'll save 20%. I'm going to Bandon next week. I can't tell you how excited I am. I can't tell you how excited my friends are. My friends have been nerding out unlike anything I've seen before. A buddy of mine, one of my best friends, scanned all the Bandon Dunes yardage books and emailed them out to all the people going that haven't been yet. Yep, that's pretty deep. I actually mentioned that on Twitter and got some great, great responses from a lot of you about some of the things you've done or your friends have done over the years as you plan golf trips. I didn't know this was a thing. I didn't know people did this. They went out of their way to plan out golf holes before they even went, but apparently they do, and I'm proud of my friends for really, really getting into it. A reminder, if you need to get in touch with us, you can jump on Twitter, follow me at Shane Bacon. You can follow the Clubhouse podcast at the Clubhouse Pod. I've mentioned these koozies that are coming out. They are in the mail headed to my house right now. So I will have koozies. Follow that Clubhouse podcast account at the Clubhouse Pod. We'll be randomly given out to people, just people that follow, people that like the podcast, people that mention positive things. So if that's something that you think you might be interested in, you know, just interact with us and maybe a koozie will show up at your doorstep. Of course, you can follow me on Instagram and Snapchat at ShaneBacon11 altogether. That's where a lot of my stuff will be from Bandon next week. There will be no Clubhouse podcast next week of Thanksgiving week. We're going to take the week off as I, of course, go to Oregon for some golf and some debauchery and some fun. But we'll have one the next week. I've got some fun guests coming up, some guys that I think will be interesting conversations, especially as the golf season, as the PGA Tour season winds down a bit. I think it's worth bringing in some people that maybe look at golf and talk about golf a different way. That's enough of this. Time to get to the interview with Matt Janella. Many thanks to Maddie for joining us. He's got some cool announcements. He's had a great year, a life-changing year, really. And we talked a lot about his life, his time with the television, with Golf Channel and such. And, of course, we talked a lot of golf travels. Here we go, Maddie G. And we now welcome into the clubhouse Matt Janella. You all know Matty G from his time at Golf Channel, a large part of the Daily Morning Show, their morning drive. He does a great job with travel lifestyle, and he'll hit into the simulator. He'll do anything you want, and he's very, very good at it. You can also check out Matt's writing and travel tips at golfadvisor.com. Make sure you check out golfadvisor.com. He gives some great advice there for anybody planning a travel trip, and really that's the point of having Matty on. It's a long-awaited debut on the clubhouse because I've known Matty for a while and he's a great dude, but I'm planning a trip, Matty, to Bandon Dunes, and I figured what better time to have you on to chat in, you know, the low point of the PGA Tour season coupled with a trip to probably your favorite place in the world. So first, thanks for coming on, and second, anytime you hear somebody going to Bandon, do you get a little bit jealous?
I was going to say, you've gone a long way, Shane, to really rubbing it in. And and it's noted. You know, it's noted. I get it. I now know to unfollow you on Twitter and Instagram for the next couple weeks just to make sure that it doesn't drive me crazy.
Well, I do. In my office, I still have my Uncle Tony a trophy proudly presented there when I got to play with Damon a couple of years ago. And it was a brutal... It was a great win for us, but it really, I got to say, I'm not sure if we 100% deserved it. We were leaking oil towards the end, and you hit a fantastic putt on the last hole at Trails that I can still see in my brain that really should have gone in from some 40 feet, but just rolled the lip. And I remember thinking you laid on the ground for a minute and just understanding what happened there. But yeah, you know, as when you get people that are headed to Bandon Dunes, when you hear this, I wanted to ask first, you know, when we go to your first trip to Bandon Dunes, I wanted to know when it was, and if you can remember your feelings for a guy that travels all the time, goes to all these great places. What was it like when you first got a chance to check out Bandon Dunes?
The first time I was scheduled to go, I can't remember the year, but it was that year of the rolling brownout in the Northeast. And I was boarding a plane to go meet two friends up at Bandon Dunes. And then we were going to work our way down the coast and end up at what was ultimately our annual buddy's trip at a little place called Baywood Country Club in Arcata, California. And we get on the plane in New York and we're backing out away from the gate. And the pilot comes on and says, actually, situation here. They're talking about power outage. It doesn't look like we're going to be able to take off. Shouldn't take long. Pulling back into the gate. Well, 2 hours later, they're taking us off the plane, keeping our luggage on the plane. They're telling us you got to get back into New York. There's this rolling brownout. I'm at JFK. Needless to say, I didn't get those clubs back for weeks. I ended up missing my first trip to Bandon Dunes. And at that time, I know that it had to be before 2005 because Trails wasn't there yet. It was just Bandon Pacific. And I believe that's the case. And I always tell people I've been making up for missing my first trip to Bandon ever since with as many trips as I could possibly get. I that place to me is my home away from home. It feels like that's my, you know, people say, oh, I have a summer cottage or a winter getaway. Well, that's my place. I just love it there.
Yeah, and I was going to ask why you always say it's your favorite destination. And one of the things that I've always pulled away from you know, the fortunate opportunities I've had to go to Bandon Dunes over the years is I think the relaxation of the place is underexplained to people. You know, you go and you don't have to get behind a wheel. You don't have to drive a car. You can move tee times around a little bit easier years ago when it wasn't as busy as it is now. But, you know, it just is stress-free, really, when you think about it. And even the golf courses, the way they open up, those first holes at all four of the golf courses are relatively easy golf holes to start your rounds. You know, it does just seem like a warm blanket. And people go to golf places and destinations all the time where stress is still involved. And I just feel like at Bandon, the stress disappears.
It certainly does for me. And that in large part is why it is my number one. It speaks to my soul, really. And it sounds weird and cliche and kind of, you know, lame, but honestly, from a spiritual standpoint, that place really does, it does calm, you know, it does calm me down. I think it, and you can, let's separate the golf here for a second. Let's not even take golf out of the factor, out of the situation. And you think about the Spartan lodging, the friendly faces, you see the same employees there year in and year out. They remember your name. You remember their name. It's people like Shu, who I think on his business card is director of outdoor happiness. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he takes it seriously, you know, and it's about the little pockets of the hang, you know, it's about the fire pits. It's about the back porches. That and they simplify everything. They strip everything away, and they just leave you to good food, you know, accommodations that make sense, with pockets of tranquility throughout the property, where, you know, small groups of people of friends are left to just be able to you know, be with each other, whether that also extends out to the punch bowl putting green, the preserve, the short course. And then you get into the championship golf and you have four very different experiences by, you know, essentially three different architectural firms, but even the old McDonald is sort of in homage of CB McDonald. You've got good caddies. All the walkability of it is great. The scenery, the, you know, so when you start adding all that up, oh, by the way, that's how something gets to number one.
Right. And you are a different being. I mean, you are the guy people go to when they talk about golf travel. So I wanted to ask you, you know, when regular people, quote unquote, regular people go to a new golf spot, you know, it's a vacation. It's a time away from work, a slice of life. There's no work on your mind, no family on your mind, no kids on your mind. You're just going. Do you have a process yourself when you go check out a new place so you can evaluate it properly and compare it to other places? Because it is a hard thing to do, compare, Kohler to Bandon to Streamsong to Cabot.
Well, what you just described is my job. You know, so my job is to try to observe as much as I can. And it's not, it's important for me not to necessarily only evaluate a place on my experiences, because in many circumstances, in almost every circumstance, they know I'm coming. They're going to roll out the red carpet. They're going to make sure that everything's taken care of. Okay, so that's very much appreciated on my end. And it's not saying, I'm not saying it's not, but that actually is what I have to sift through all of that and do some sense of, you know, analysis based on the people I'm around. So whether it's the people I'm with that I came with, or the people who I meet along the way, I try to ask people inconspicuously at a bar or a restaurant or out on the golf course or caddies or starters. I'll just pick people's brains and say, so how are things going on? You know, invariably you'll find people who are very forthcoming with thoughts and opinions. It's not unlike what we do socially in our social circles of Twitter and Instagram. It's just crowdsourcing as much. If I only depended on my two eyes, that's not really fair to everybody I'm reporting back to. I've got to give a cumulative assessment. Otherwise, it's not fair to the viewer or the reader. It's especially not fair to the destination. You know what I mean?
Right.
The only way all of this works is if we can kind of move through the smoke screen and actually make a proper assessment based on what people's needs and you know, wants are.
Yeah. So when you go to the Golden Bee or something, you're doing investigative reporting, really, in a way. You're going and having a beer and picking the brains of the patrons. Maybe they've had a few more beers than you, but you're getting a feel for what they're saying.
I take that so seriously, Shane. I mean, come on.
Well, you know, it's funny. You mentioned the hang and the Bandon hang. And really, I mean, a lot of places have that where they have a fire pit and stuff. What I think is so interesting about Bandon, and I don't want to, this isn't an ad for Bandon Dunes, but you know what I find so funny about Bandon is the core Bandon chatter. When you're at Bandon, you come back from Bandon, or really around the entire experience, people want to know favorite golf courses. They love that ranking for whatever reason. I mean, we have the ranking boards on our walls about the top 100, but for some reason it really comes back down to Bandon. I remember you and I are sitting in the fire pit one day. Somebody said we were morons for thinking Bandon Trails was our favorite course there. Oh, it's not a good golf course. Da, 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 da. And it's just interesting because, you know, you evaluate a resort based on your experiences and experiences around you. I just find it so funny. And I mean, we just went through a political process, not to get in that thing, but you know, we just went through a political process where people are completely different in their mindset. And you get that at Bandon as well. People love Pacific, hate Old Mac, love Bandon, hate Trails. It's just so interesting because they're all good golf courses, but you get some serious debate, especially, you know, at the pub after two or three IPAs.
Well, that we're now adding on as to why Bandon is number one. The fact that people can go to one destination of four courses and have so much varied opinions on what is the best is exactly that's music to Mike Kaiser's ears, the owner of Bandon Dunes. That's all he could possibly ask for. That's all any owner of a multi-destination, a multi-course destination, has. You want balance in the debate as to what is the best course. If you don't have that, you've got a problem, because then you're going to have rounds on one more than the other. You're going to have price variations. You're going to have, you know, the beauty of Bandit, they're all cost the same.
Right.
You're free to make a choice based on purely what works for you. And that goes to the variation of architects. You know, at Kohler, I love Kohler, but you got four Pete Dye golf courses. That was Herb's, that's Herb's vision. Mike Kaiser has a different vision. Mike Kaiser's vision speaks to me a little bit more because I'm spoiled. I like different architects. I want different experiences. And if I can get those in one place and I don't have to drive, to your point, that's even better. Pinehurst has 9 golf courses, okay? But there's not a lot of debate that 1, 3, 5, 6, 7 or any of them are better than number 2,
right?
Quite honestly. And then you get number 8, which is a very good golf course, and they're going to redo number 4. But that, I think they're redoing for it because they need more balance to the conversation as to which is the best course at Pinehurst. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And by the way, you have the short course and the putting course. Pinehurst is now going to add a short course. You know, I think Kohler, a lot of these multi-course destinations could really benefit from having short courses and putting courses, places where we can go and not have to get beat up over an 18-hole experience and yet still feel like we're having camaraderie on a golf course with our buddies.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you think about Preserve, I mean, you think about a place where, I mean, as long as the you know, schedule or the tee sheet, you know, allows it, you know, you could go out with 13 guys and play golf with 13 buddies, and it doesn't feel like your you know, drives are zinging over your head and stuff. I mean, it does allow that. And I love that about the horse course at Prairie Club. You know, you're talking about a place where you can go and go, we're playing to that green on this hole, buddy, and let's go. And you 5-on-5 scramble. I mean, I think that's a little bit of where golf's going. I did want to ask, you know, you get to go to a lot of high-end places, you know, with Morning Drive, with Golf Channel. You guys get to hit up some of the nicest golf courses around the country, really. I was going to ask, is there an affordable place? When people ask you, what's a real affordable golf destination that doesn't get talked about enough, is there a place that pops up in your mind?
Well, I mean, there's a ton of those. And I try to create a balance in what I'm talking about in terms of destinations. You know, a lot of people will harp on me like, oh, it's too expensive. Why don't you do it? So I listen, and I know that money is a huge factor, obviously, for so many people. And golf is expensive. And I try to be super sensitive to that. You know, it's places like Brainerd, Minnesota, where you get a top 100 golf course in what's called the Classic, but you get top 10 in terms of value, because you can play that golf course for around $100. Top 100 course for around $100, relatively speaking to its competition, that's insane value.
Right.
If you spend any time in northern Michigan, and the prices are going up in northern Michigan, and the golf is continuing to get better, but, you know, relatively speaking, in the summer and with the weather that you're getting in northern Michigan, that's going to be great value. There's a ton of insane that, like, it's Peninsula Golf Club in Lancaster, Kentucky, I believe. You can go there, and there's cottages there, Shane, that you and I would, with 6 buddies and 2 foursomes, we could barbecue at our back deck. We could play a Pete Dye golf course for $50. We can play it as many times. We can get a home cooked meal for breakfast at the clubhouse there. I've done a story on it. You know, you for $300, you can spend a long weekend there and play as much golf as you want. You know what I mean? And spend as much time with your buddies as you want. You know, it's in Myrtle Beach. I mean, they know they want to give. It's not giving the golf away. They definitely have great golf, but you know, they use the golf to bait the tourists, and then they get you down there, and you're going to eat, and you're going to drink, and you're going to do other things around town, whatever you want, and that's where they've built that reputation for being good value golf.
It's interesting because, you know, we do tend to gravitate, you know, towards the best of the best. I mean, when we think about this, and you mentioned it, there is so much good golf, and it seems like there's so much sneaky good golf, and just it's almost sometimes hard to find those sneaky good golf courses. But, you know, you find one with a good value. And I always tell people, you know, when they come to Phoenix, you know, you can go to Wecopaw, you can go to Greyhawk, you can go to True North, You can go to Talking Stick, but you can go play Papago for $60 and you'll have a great experience there as well. It's just about, you know, almost diving into those values and trying to find them, you know, tucked in between the really, really, as you mentioned, the championship style golf courses.
I have to be very careful because when people come to me, they want to know generally the best in the area. They don't want to know, hey, Matt, give me the top five second best golf experiences in that destination. You know what I mean? Yeah, they want, and I'll try to steer them towards value if that's exactly what they're looking for. But at the end of the day, I've got to give my reputation's on the line. Their time is on the line. Their money is on the line. They've squirreled away these 4 or 5 days every year to be with their buddies. I got to make sure I try to find a place that fits for them. And even and it goes beyond buddies trips. It goes to couples trips. It goes to families trips. It goes to all ladies trips. You know what I mean? That there are all these pockets of people take golf trips, and when they ask me these questions, I've got to make sure I don't just blanket statement something or send them to some place that might just be good value when they're really looking for a memorable sort of, you know, bucket list experience. So I walk a fine line there.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to ask how many emails are you getting from people? Because I mean, people ask me stuff and I mean, I'm not nearly as well versed as you are about golf traveling and picking out the right spots for the right group of people. How many emails are you getting? How many times are you writing emails about, you know, Myrtle or Scottsdale or Bandon or, you know, Pinehurst?
I mean, it's a lot, but that's kind of what that is what I do. You know, I would say, you know, 80% of my Twitter activity is in some form of having a conversation about a golf course somewhere in the world, you know, whether it's asking for feedback or providing insight or, you know, crowdsourcing an area that I don't know. That's pretty much what I do. And if I'm not doing it, then I probably need to start, you know, looking for another job, really.
For sure. Well, I was going to ask this, and I, you love golf. I mean, I'm not sure people understand how much you love going out and playing and being out there and the camaraderie and stuff. But I mean, you really, really love the game. What's a dream vacation for you? I mean, is golf involved, or is a dream vacation for you getting a bit away from the game?
No, we were just talking before we started the podcast, you know, life is changing for me drastically, you know, that, you know, very publicized in my little world, and that I've gotten married and my new wife has three kids and honestly, we actually have one on the way. So there you go.
Nice. Congratulations.
But you know, things are changing and, you know, drastically and rapidly. And the thing is for me, Katie knows this and she loves it. You know, she knows it's not like she doesn't know who she's going to spend the rest of her life with. I love golf trips. And so I joke about having a prenup in which I get to keep, you know, my 5 to 6 annual buddies trips as part of the wedding deal. And, we joke about, you know, if I start at 6, can I end up somewhere near 2? And, you know, but she knows it's actually part of my job. If I'm not taking my own buddies trips, then how can I report on what is a great buddies trip? You know what I mean? Yep. That is my vacation. I love my buddies trips. I love seeing friends. I love connecting friends. I love the golf, you know, the component of it. What a game. I mean, we have this beautiful game and we have all these relationships. We should exercise the right to get together as often as possible.
I battle with this too. I mean, it's so funny. I think about, I mean, I'm planning a wedding right now and we're eloping, we're going to New Zealand. And my fiance said, you're bringing your golf clubs. I'm not making you go on something without your golf clubs. And it's so funny because people probably look at that and go, you know, you talk about it and you write about it. You do all this stuff around golf. Why would you want to do this? Yeah. And it's funny because I'm the same way. And I mean, it's good. Listen, that's a good problem to have, with you still actually like the thing you do for a living. But it is funny. I'm with you. I mean, I'm going on a guy's buddy trip to Bandon, and I've been thinking about it for a month and a half, you know. And I mean, it's just, I guess that's just the way we're wired.
Congratulations to you, by the way. And that's exactly why you are marrying her and why I married Katie, because that's that's a big part. That's, you know, it's part of who we are. It's
right.
It is what we do. It's, you know, I would be doing this if it wasn't my job. That's the facts.
Yeah. I mean, it is funny. And I'm sure you've dealt with this with buddies of yours before, but you know, I've had a couple of buddies that have gotten married or engaged and stuff. And you sense the feeling that their significant other isn't a huge fan of them going out for 5 hours and playing golf. And you're like, you know, this is yoga to some people. You know, this is a deep breath, a relief. I mean, going out on a golf course for 5 hours to a lot of us golf obsessed people is something we need, you know, once a week or once every couple of weeks. It's not something we're doing as a getaway as much as it is something we want to do so we can get that fulfillment inside of us.
For sure. I mean, you know, that's certainly the case for me. I say, you know, golf is my religion and my spirituality. And no, really, I mean, that is where I'm happiest, you know. And, you know, as someone jokes, so, you know, if your wife gives you a hard time, you know, about golf, just say you love golf well before you loved her. You know what I mean? Something, you know, I'm right. Not saying that,
right.
You know, but people have been, I don't know that I'd go that far, but, you know, and run the risk of the feedback there. But I mean, it's kind of true. I mean, it is a bit of my first love. I mean, golf and growing up and the time I would spend with my dad or my uncles or then eventually my friends. And, you know, that is why I think I love the hang of a destination so much, because that's where we do our hanging.
And I was going to ask just a follow-up to golf course destination buddy trips. I was going to ask you about country clubs because, you know, I'm 33, you know, I'm kind of at that age where people start to kind of decide, especially in Arizona, I feel like joining a country club is a badge of honor. It really is kind of a badge of honor, really, for whatever reason, for, you know, business people and such. And do you sense that the country club is struggling at this point, or do you think that it's going to be always something that people want to be a part of? My dad was at a country club, I should be in one. Do you feel like you could see more country clubs closing, or do you think they're going to make it through all this?
Well, I'm thankfully I don't consider private country clubs my beat, you know, and although we get a lot of opportunities and very thankful for a lot of great opportunities to play a lot of private clubs. And there's a lot of clubs you go in, I'm sure you feel the same way, where you're like, wow, this place gets it. This is an amazing club. It's got the right vibe and energy. It's not holding on the wheel too tight. It is a good hang for all the people, their clientele, whatever their clientele is, you know what I mean? And you can feel it. You can feel it almost in the first 10 minutes you're on property of a private club. Is it good? Or is it successful or is it failing?
Right.
You know, and you can make a pretty snap judgment and you know there's going to be either turnover or sale or whatever. Now, I've long believed that we need to look no further than, you know, the UK to understand what is a business model that makes sense in terms of private golf. And that is, there are memberships and there's a private experience. And yet when you've got open tee sheets and days when you don't have a lot of member play, you can really supplement the annual cost by opening up your doors to outside play, charging a premium price, letting people have a kind of member for an afternoon experience or morning, and they move on. You know what I mean? And it's like, there are always going to be 250, you know, 400 great successful private clubs in America, because that's sort of where it all started, and they're never going to have, you know, Pine Valley's never going to have to open up its doors to outside
right.
play. I get it. Oakmont, pretty set. Augusta, I think they're okay. San Francisco Golf Club, you know, you can go around and say, okay, people are willing to pay a premium to have a real sort of closed door experience. Good for you. But other than that, if you're kind of a tweener experience in which you're not this one of these notorious and prestigious clubs that make sense with, you know, established base of membership, then you got to be looking at other, I would think you got to be looking at other options and opportunities. And we're spoiled. I don't think I'll ever really join an exclusive club and only play golf there. I could not imagine there's many clubs that can captivate, hold our attention for 10, 20 years by only playing that golf course or those golf courses.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think social media to an extent and the way our minds work now compared to 10 years ago, we're always looking for something new. We're always seeing new things, exciting stuff. You're posting pictures of, Sand Valley or, this new course or the Loop or something like that. And, people see that and they go, I want to go play that. If you're handcuffed to a place that you play every day, it's probably a little hard. And now you've got a financial responsibility there. I find the country club idea so interesting because while it does, you do have a place to play golf, you have a place to hang, as you've mentioned a few times, the hang is a big part of golf and the fun of it. You might not have as many opportunity to go out and play. Even somebody like me who lives in Phoenix who might want to go play, Wickenburg Ranch, which is a really nice new place to go play that's a 30, 45-minute drive. If you have to go shell $150, you're thinking, well, I got this, these dues here. It's a very interesting internal battle to have, and frankly, a very privileged person problem, I guess, to have as well. But I did want to get into some Twitter questions. Emil wrote, best way to appreciate a course you're only going to play once in your life. And I wanted to ask you, when you're going to a place that you feel like you might not return to or might not return to for a long time, what's the best way to appreciate that experience?
Well, you got to be very careful and you got to be very careful not to try to over document the experience, whether it's socially or taking pictures or whatever, and actually allow yourself the time away from kind of the device, dilemma, and actually enjoy the experience, actually get some spiritual connection to the experience beyond just taking pictures to be able to say, oh, look, I was there. You know what I mean? You can get caught up in saying, oh, look at the seventh hole at Pebble Beach. We took this picture and everything. But do you actually remember playing the hole and feeling what you felt on the tee? You know what I mean? Like you can overdo it. So if you're only going to play it once, it's another thing. It's one thing to be able to know, oh, you're going to play it five times. You can take one round and what you really document it and do it in a nice light, which I do a lot of banding. There's times I decide to band. You know what? Golf is not the priority here. I really want to document my experience and share this, the visions, the views, and take advantage of the light. And there's times where I don't take the phone at all. I'm playing it in a match, and I've got, I'm on my buddy's trip, and I really want to enjoy this round,
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you say that. I was going through some pictures from some of my banding trips, and it's interesting. When I went with you, when we went for Uncle Tony a couple of years ago, and it was, it's British Open week, and we had great groups. We were playing some fun golf, and I had like 30 pictures I took, and I remember there was one round I think I was looking through. I had one picture, and I almost feel like that's a good example of how much fun you had. It's like I didn't even think to take my phone out. I was enjoying my moment out there. I'd also suggest to people, forget what your handicap is, forget what you normally shoot. Golf trips are about everything besides how well you played. It's like you want to play well, but if you don't, that's okay too.
Well, I think the alpha planner needs to account for that too. And I just talked about this this week on Morning Drive, and that is the balance of competition and camaraderie. So, as you recall, what I've tried to do now in the annual Uncle Tony is build in fun rounds. So competitive round in the morning, afternoon round. We're going to mix up groups. We're going to mix up teams. We're going to play a scramble. We'll play a two-man scramble. We'll play, like have a round in which it's not pressure to sort of perform.
Yeah.
And mix that in within the round. So we do competitive, camaraderie, and then competitive. You know what I mean? Kind of mix it up and toggle them through. And then with the short course and the putting course is a whole nother tournament in itself now and kind of breaks it up. I think that's important for the alpha planner to not overcook the competitive factor.
Well, and you're talking about, a 15, 18, 20 handicap who has never played links golf, potentially never played golf like that. And I mean, a 2-footer is not easy for somebody like that. A 2-footer for an 18 handicap is not something they probably normally even putt out. So it's remembering what's normal to them in golf too. And I think that's very important. I've told all my friends, before we've gone on this, especially people that have never gone on, never been to Bantam before, you're not going to shoot what you think you're going to shoot. Just plan on that. And if you do, that's awesome. But just expect, you know, four or five shots higher than your handicap, and that's just going to be part of it. I mean, you're not used to hitting the 8-iron from 100 yards, bumping, running it up to the front of the green. That's just, you know, not something you do when you're playing your local, you know, Parkland golf course. Howard asked, Pebble, Sawgrass, Pinehurst, number two, straights, you know, they're all upwards of $400, if not more. How much higher do you think these rounds can go? And I kind of have an answer. I wanted to hear what your thoughts were.
Well, you know, I stopped a few years ago really kind of harping on green fees because in my mind, these are the laws of economics. You know, the demand will dictate the price. And if Pebble is delivering a $500 experience to the point where people are not only going but going back, that's Pebble's prerogative. Mm-hmm. I can't, you know, I just left Sawgrass. They made a bunch of changes. That's a $400, you know, experience. You know, that golf course is hard to me. I'm not going to shoot to my handicap. I'm going to lose golf balls. I'm going to get frustrated. I'm going to hope that I make par at 17 and I'm going to play that stretch and I'm going to be like, wow, I played Sawgrass. I get to say I played there. It's a bucket list experience. It's really fun. But I don't know that I could play it, you know, more than, you know, once every couple of years where right. I'm like, whoa, that's really hard. But they just reopened. They have no available tee times for the first 3.5 weeks. I mean, people, that's people's, that's their prerogative to charge that. So I, you know, the answer to the question is, thankfully I don't have to worry about that. The laws of economics take care of that.
It's
that,
exactly that's, right.
And then I can only make judges on relative value based on what they're delivering compared to their competition.
Well, and same thing. I mean, you know, I know golf can be expensive at times, but when the tee sheet is booked, I went to Kohler. I was playing Erin Hills to get a little preview of the U.S. Open right before they closed, and I went up to Kohler kind of on a whim with my dad, and we couldn't get on the straights. It was completely booked for 3 straight days, you know, and I said, I mean, if it's completely booked for 3 straight days, they should probably make the prices higher. I mean, you know, I mean, sorry to people that hate to hear
that's right.
But this is what it is. I mean, this is why, you know, I had Bob Parsons on my podcast a few months ago, and you know, I asked him about his golf clubs and I said, is there any chance you could make, you know, a driver for $600? And he didn't even understand what I was asking because he went, no, that's not the people we're going after. And I mean, you know, to a certain extent, sometimes the same thing with some golf courses. But I just wanted to ask you a couple more. I want to get you out. First things first, you were a writer. You were really into photography, previous jobs. Was TV something that you had always been interested in possibly getting into?
Two parts to the answer. First of all, no, I wasn't chasing a career in television. Once I went to Sports Illustrated and landed an internship and got a job as a photo editor, I was kind of going down a whole nother path. And now going back to college, I did all the, you know, I really focused on radio broadcasting. I did all the, you know, I did play-by-play for the St. Mary's basketball and football games. We had been picked up by a small local professional radio station. And so it felt like it was, you know, it was real radio. And I was doing interviews with the Warriors who came and practiced at St. Mary's. And I thought, oh, okay, I wanted to do radio. I had a long-term dream of being a Sports Center anchor, as most of my, you know, people in my generation did at some point or another. It was like kind of like being a fireman when you're six, you know what I mean? Everybody at some point was like, yeah, I'd be a Sports Center anchor. And so I kind of had that in the back of my head, but all of that got shelved once I started down the path of print and photography. And then once I decided that writing was something I wanted to do and I had gone to Columbia and then to Golf Digest, I was all in on print until it started looking like print was taking a significant downturn, if not, you know, the ultimate nosedive. So that's TV came along at a time. You know, it was good, great timing. The opportunity came along, and it was like I was in a situation in which I felt like it wasn't much of a gamble. It was something that I needed to try to do.
Well, I mean, and it's worked out great. I mean, you've continued to get better and better and better on TV, and it's been fun. It's been just been fun watching, honestly, just from afar. Because I mean, I think we met in San Fran at the Webb Simpson U.S. Open. And I think that right before you started with Morning Drive. That was when we had the whole tow car experience that was really interesting. And they locked the car, our rental car keys into some rental car and wouldn't let us get our car out. But that's a time for another podcast. But I mean, you know, that was right before Morning Drive came along, and then it was like morning, you know, the Morning Drive thing and the travel thing. It's been a lot of fun. Two last things, and you can make this simple and sweet and short. For somebody, I mean, if you don't follow Matty G on Instagram, it's Matt_Janella, and he posts great golf pictures and life pictures, really. But you have a keen eye for photography. So if I was going to say, write me two sentences to people on how to make and take better golf pictures, what would your two points be?
Use the light to your advantage. It's all about the light. You know, I think Robert Beck, Sports Illustrated photographer, covers a lot of golf, great at what he does, had said that to me at one point. You know, editing a lot of the film for Sports Illustrated photographers for 6.5 years, one thing that they all have in common and being at an elite level is an incredible sense and efficiency with light. So, you know, if you want this, you know where the sun is at all times. Know that in the first hour and the last hour of the day are the best times to shoot. It's just sort of the softest, most colorful light that you'll get, as opposed to high noon, which is considered harsh light. You're not going to take a lot of great pictures at high noon. You're going to take a lot of great, you know, I sometimes only take pictures in the first hour of the day and the last hour of the day, and hope that I'm in a good spot at those times, or put myself in a good spot at those times to take pictures. So light is everything. The other thing is, and I can't emphasize, don't crop before you take the picture. Don't zoom in. Don't eliminate the amount of information you have in the image until after you've shot the picture. Do you know what I'm saying?
Interesting,
either move yourself closer, or just take it as is and then crop afterwards. But by zooming in, you're not allowing for the most of each pixel is information. So you don't want to make the pixels bigger until after you've shot the picture. You want to keep them small and keep as many pixels in the image as at all possible. So it's two pretty easy suggestions: light and zoom.
I watched you. We got a very cool opportunity to play with Tom Weisskopf at TPC Scottsdale after they reopened his redesign, and the sun was setting on 16, and you had Tom take this really cool picture with his hat, and I was kind of watching the way you did it, and it was really something kind of clicked. Well, just watching the way you set something up and set the scene almost, and like you said, you use the light, and I've really kind of tried to take that a little bit to heart, and I do feel like my pictures are a little bit better. So there you go. So that's all you.
Great,
so thank you so
much.
You're
on a roll, Baker.
Yeah, man, this is all on you. One last thing, and if you had, do you have a perfect, like when people ask what's the perfect number for a buddy's trip, do you have one? Is it 8? Is it 12? Is it anything really?
Yeah, I've capped my current buddy's trip out at 24 because I feel like I don't know if 28 is too many, but I don't want to get to too many. I don't want to sacrifice a year of finding out that's too many. I don't want to run that risk. I know 24 is good because we know the destination. It's stay and play. We're not using rental cars and moving from place to place. Everybody kind of gets in, hunkers down, and then leaves. So 24 is workable. And I know the people, and I know the coordinator. Like, I can work with the man. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
We got it. But if this was if we were going to Scotland or Ireland and we were trying to hit a couple different hubs of golf, I would keep it to 4. And maybe 8 if I knew the group was pretty low maintenance or we had a big bus that we can all fit in. Because you don't want to have more than 2 cars, or 2 vehicles trying to get from place to place. I mean, can you imagine over there or trying to, you know, if you're rolling around Michigan, multiple cars. So in other words, if you're on the move, I like to keep the buddy's trip to 4. If you're hunkering down to stay and play, you can go, you can do as many as you want. And I've covered groups that are upwards of 160, but that's like a tournament. It's not a buddy's trip.
Right.
That's something that I don't necessarily think that I'll ever plan or be a part of. But the 24 still feels like you can get everybody at one big table and have one big meal together.
Right. If you had and I don't want you to get in trouble, so you don't have to answer this if you don't want to. You have a Mount Rushmore of current golf course designers, current guys that are currently building golf courses. Who would be on your Mount Rushmore of current guys? And again, you know, this isn't to alienate anybody. This is just simply saying the guys that are red hot right
now.
Oh,
no, I don't mind. Yeah, I don't mind. Well, first of all, Corin Crenshaw occupy one spot
right
on Mount Rushmore. They are one in the same. Corin Crenshaw are my number one. Pete Dye, you've got to put him up there because he's Pete Dye, and he's built some of the greatest, you know, tournament golf courses, tournament venues to test the pros. And thankfully that, you know, he did that, because think of how good these guys have gotten and are going to continue to get. And we need golf courses that are our sort of baseball and football stadiums of golf. You know what I mean? Places where, you know, NFL and MLB go to celebrate the best and watch what they do. So we need those kind of courses. And Pete Dye is the modern guy who's building that. After that, I'm putting Gil Hanse on there. We're just now really starting to see what he's capable of, and I also just put him on there because he's such a class act. I mean,
right,
he's such a good guy, and I think Castle Stewart is where I really was like, wow, this guy is really good. And you know, I think what he did at the Olympics was a bit of a small miracle. And I don't think he got a lot of credit for it, but I don't think he got enough credit, because I think dealing with all of what he dealt with down there, it's pretty amazing. And I'm looking forward to Stream Song Black, which is going to be pretty impressive. And I know what he did at Mossy Oak was a good course there. And if he gets a hold of the Sheep Ranch at Bandon Dunes, which I'm told is going to happen, that's can't wait for that. And now he's going to redo number four at Pinehurst. So you got to put Gil on there. The last spot is interesting. The purists, you know, I actually really like Tom Fazio. I really do. I'm an 8 handicap. He's moved a lot of earth. He gets, you know, a lot of criticism from the minimalist and the Tom Doak, you know, from the team Tom Doak. But honestly, I like a lot of Tom Fazio golf experiences. They're beautiful. You can usually shoot your handicap. I don't know. I'd put Fazio. He deserves a lot of credit. He's done a lot of great things.
Yeah, it's fun. I'm glad you put Gil in there as well. You mentioned it. He's so nice that when he's a part of the Fox broadcast team, we actually had discussions sometime, and we're like, has this guy ever been mean before? I don't know how he works with people. He's just such a tenderhearted human being. It's incredible. And as you mentioned, he's kind of had a great 2016 that will continue. If you had one last round of golf to play on any golf course in the world, what are you picking?
I always say the Old Course. You know, I, like most people, after playing it the first time, was like, really? That was it. And it just, that was more a reflection on me than it was the golf course. You know, it was, you know, I was a young 20 something. All I cared about was trying to break 80. I never really looked up and really appreciated my surroundings, never took time to kind of go, you know, walk the town the way I've done now over time. And the more I play it, the more I love it, the more I appreciate the nuances to the routing and to the rolls and the fairways and the greens and making the town really small in your rearview mirror, and then turning around and watching it get bigger as you play towards the 18th green. It's just the people that walk the streets along the golf course, that walk through the golf course, the dogs, the water, the structures, the everything. That's it. That's the spot.
Yeah.
That's,
if there was,
that's if, if, That's the Vatican.
Yeah, if there is at some point an asteroid headed towards Earth and we do have one last round to play, I will be on the flight sitting next to you because that will also be my final round of golf. So we'll go for the two-person package to play the Old Course as a farewell to golf. But there's nothing like it. There is nothing on this planet like playing the Old Course at St. Andrews. And, I mean, you know, I was lucky enough to get a chance to caddy there for a few months. And seeing the faces of the people walking
up. That's so
cool. A 70-year-old American man that's never played there walking over the bridge and walking up 18 has this grin on their face that you'll never see anywhere else. Maybe you'd see it at Pebble a little bit, but I'm still not sure it totally can grasp someone like the magnitude that is playing this golf course. It's been around for so many years. Maddie, I really appreciate it. I know we went long. Thanks so much for everything you do. Congrats on the recent nuptials. Congrats on the kiddo. I know that's new news, and I'm so happy for you guys. You can always catch everything Maddie does on Morning Drive. Every morning on Golf Channel, you can read everything he does, travel tips and such on golfadvisor.com. If you have a question for him, hit him on Twitter. He's really good about responding, at Matt Janella GC. And Maddie, we owe each other a round of golf together. It's been a while.
Looking forward to it. I assume I'll see you in January, if not before. Congrats on your news, buddy. Always good to catch up, and thanks for thinking of me.
It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole! It's in the hole!
A reminder, Swing Juice is your destination for holiday gift ideas for the golfer in your life. T-shirts are comfortable, soft. They make a perfect present for the golfer that has everything. I recently sent my dad a Swing Juice shirt. He told me today, and I quote, "Man, that thing's just so soft." He loves it. You'll love it. Check out swingjuice.com right now. Don't forget to use that offer code BACON at checkout. It'll save you 20%. Swingjuice.com. If you can't think of a present idea, that's the one to go with. That'll do it for us this week on the Clubhouse. Many thanks to Matt Janella. Many thanks to Swing Juice. A lot of cool things coming down the hopper. We've got some t-shirt ideas we're going to throw up on their website sooner than later. They have koozies as well on their website. They're only $3 if you need a beer hugger as the weather turns and your hands are getting a little cold holding that beer can. Hope everybody has a very safe and amazing Thanksgiving week. I hope all the travel plans work out great. I'll be at Bandon Dunes. If you're at Bandon Dunes, make sure you come say hi. There'll be 12 of us. We'll probably be the guys that are yucking it up and making fun of each other for a bad golf shot here or there. Playing all the courses, a massive percentage of the group going with us has never been before. So it's, to me, it's just as exciting as sharing the experience with those guys as it is actually getting to go yourself. And of course, I'm getting to throw in a little Eugene Country Club around as well. Everybody have a great Thanksgiving. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. Thanks so much for listening, for subscribing. This has been a lot of fun rolling out these Clubhouse podcasts every week, and it's all because of you guys that were able to do it. If you love the show, rate it, review it, subscribe to it, tell your friends about it. We will be back in a couple of weeks. Hit them straight, make some birdies.